You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending November 6, and it's podcast number 64. It's later than usual. Sorry, I couldn't avoid that. I'm Joe Elia. This week's conversation is with Dr. Frederick Grover of the University of Colorado. We're talking about his paper in last week's New England Journal of Medicine concerning on-pump versus off-pump approaches to coronary artery bypass surgery. First, this review of recent important clinical news stories. You knew it already, but now here's data. The average length of primary care visits are actually increasing. Why did you think you were getting home so late? In an analysis of some 45,000 adult primary care visits between 1997 and 2005, the length of the average visit increased by about 15%. That's from 18 minutes to about 21. Next, the CDC thinks there's enough confusion out there on using antivirals in 2009 H1N1 that they've released some quick facts for clinicians. Here are some key advisories. First, it's preferable to start antivirals within 48 hours of symptom onset, but if you can't, there's still benefit. Also, if you suspect flu but don't have lab confirmation, don't wait. Start the antivirals. Finally, a respected British publication is advising against use of aspirin in the primary prevention of cardiovascular disease, including among people with hypertension or diabetes. Yikes. The authors pondered the results of several recent meta-analyses and concluded that the available evidence doesn't justify the routine use of aspirin. I'm sure we'll be hearing more on this in the coming months. Let's get to the conversation. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. The New England Journal of Medicine last week presented the results of a Veterans Affairs Administration trial in which patients undergoing coronary artery bypass were randomized to on-pump or off-pump procedures. It has been proposed that avoiding the complications that may attend use of the heart-lung machine will improve outcomes. These investigators set out to find whether that was true. It turns out that on-pump surgery has better long-term results, which may come as a surprise. One of the principal investigators, Dr. Frederick Grover, has kindly agreed to talk with us about his study. Dr. Grover is professor and chair of the Department of Surgery at the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center in Denver, and he's also a cardiothoracic surgeon at the Denver VA Medical Center. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Grover.
Thank you.
What was the stimulus for doing this research?
Well, in the mid to late 90s, there was a great interest in seeing if a coronary bypass could be done without the use of the heart-lung machine. Almost from its inception in the mid to late 1960s, the vast majority of coronary bypasses were done with the heart-lung machine because you can stop the heart and make it stand still with no blood flow through the coronary arteries and have excellent exposure to hook up the bypasses to the coronary arteries. However, there was some concern. There were several studies out going both ways, actually, that there might be some neurological difficulties when patients were subjected to the heart-lung machine or what we call cardiopulmonary bypass. Mm-hmm. Some of the other organs could be adversely affected, such as the lungs, the kidneys, the liver. And for that reason, several surgeons actually around the world began to try to do coronary bypass without the use of the heart-lung machine in other words, beating heart. Mm-hmm. And as in the late 90s, industry responded to that interest by developing some rather nice stabilization devices where the area of the coronary that was going to be anastomosed be stabilized with much much less motion than was previously available, but with the remainder of the heart beating fairly normally. And there were snare techniques where you could partially occlude most of the blood flow going through the coronary so that you could see better, or also use indwelling shunts to decrease the blood in the operative field.
Now,
so with go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that your findings, your comparison of on-pump and off-pump procedures, you studied over 2,300 people, I think it was.
Yeah, roughly 2,200, 1,100 some in each group.
Uh-huh. And you found that in the short term, there was no difference in outcome. But long term, like by a year, there were noticeable differences, and among those was the number of grafts actually done versus the number that were planned to be done. So the people who were off pump got fewer grafts. Now, is it the problem of the beating heart and the stabilization of the beating heart that causes, say, that may have caused fewer of those grafts to have been performed?
Yes, I think the exposure is somewhat more difficult, and this study, like many others, have shown that there aren't quite as many grafts performed generally in the off-pump group of patients as compared to patients who done on the conventional manner with the heart-lung machine. And we confirmed that, and it's most likely related to difficulty in exposure or small vessels, again, being not quite as easily visualized for the anastomosis. Our early results, which by early we meant in the hospitalization or within 30 days of the hospitalization where the patient underwent the operation, we had a composite score that included risk-adjusted operative mortality and several major complications and reoperation, which is one of them. And that there was no statistically significant difference in that early score, although there was a slightly better results in the on-pump group, but not significant. And going out to 1 year, and I might mention, our primary endpoints were really the composite score for 30 days and then the composite score for the 1 year, and that is from 30 days to 1 year. And that composite score included risk-adjusted mortality, the need for reintervention, whether it be a repeat coronary bypass or a coronary angioplasty or a stent, the presence of an acute myocardial infarction or a readmission for that. That significantly favored the on-pump group. In other words, there were less of those adverse outcomes. Second, we measured secondary endpoints of graft patency rates, and we found that there was better graft patency in the on-pump group. In other words, less grafts were occluded or blocked in the on-pump group than the off-pump group, and that was significant. We also measured neuropsychological status of the patient preoperatively and then again at 1 year out, and so that the patient served as their own control. Now, we had about 50-some-odd percent where we had both the patients that we had both the pre- and the 1 year, pre-op and the 1 year neurocognitive studies done. And that was similar in both groups. There were no different. I mean, there were a similar number of patients who had both done. But and the findings were very similar. And somewhat to our surprise, because one of the proposed advantages to the off pump group would be that maybe they would have less neurocognitive changes in patients who are done on the heart lung machine. But we found that there was absolutely no difference between the groups, and actually neither group deteriorated. Their neurocognitive function was very stable for that 1 year compared to their preoperative function.
So one of the reasons that, the off-pump procedure was started was because of the fear that the being too long in the, on the heart-lung machine might have affected the brain.
Yeah, the brain and these other organs, and we found no difference in the brain function, and we found actually no significant difference in the complications either. We did not find the off-pump procedure to be protective of complications. Now, I think you do have to realize, however, that our study tended to be in the low to moderate risk coronary bypass patient group, even though the average number of bypasses performed was three, and so it was mostly triple vessel or patients, three vessel disease patients. But the average age was around 63, which isn't real high. And although many of them had comorbidities, in other words, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or a history of stroke, or previous stroke, or something of that sort, it still wasn't as high a risk as some, and it could be that there are some very high, you know, there can be maybe some very high risk patients that that might benefit from the off pump that weren't typical of the patients entered in this study. So I think it's important to always point out the limitations of any study. This also 95 to 98 or high 90% range of males because it's a VA population.
Right. So much of our listening audience are primary care physicians, and their patients may come to them during consultations with a cardiologist, or may be asking them about you know, which cardiologist they might go to, or these primary care physicians could be referring them out. What should primary care physicians know about your study then?
Well, I think, and I'll say there's one more caveat, and then I'll answer your question.
Okay.
There are some surgeons in the country that have made this a primary operation of theirs and do a very high percentage off pump. I know some. I don't know about all of them, but I know some that get and report excellent results. And again, our study was designed purposely to try to duplicate what would be a more cross section of surgeons practicing across the country, not necessarily someone who's made this one of their major areas of expertise.
Okay.
So I would say this, that there really is no compelling reason to do off surgery, unless perhaps you have somebody who really is in a particular subset of patients that you believe would maybe benefit by this, but the data isn't really out there and is being and is going to be done by somebody who's a particular expert in this area. I think the certainly in the group we studied, there was no neurocognitive benefit nor any decrease in the complications or length of stay. There was somewhat less administration of packed red blood cells in the off-pump group. So, for example, if you had a patient that, for religious beliefs reasons, would not accept any blood, an off-pump procedure, I think, could be justified in that situation. If you have a patient and is elderly or has a very calcified aorta, by doing the procedure off-pump, you could perhaps cut down on embolizing calcium from a calcified aorta because you could do a total arterial revascularization without using the heart-lung machine. That might be a subset of patients. Or if surgeons happens to be somebody who does a high percentage of these, it's possible that there might be some benefit. But I'd say in the absence of those, there's no real benefit for performing a coronary bypass off pump.
Okay. Fair enough. And for cardiologists and surgeons, I think you've also told them what they need to know. I'm sure there will be some surgeons who will be maybe already have taken exception to your findings. Have you heard from any of them?
You know, I haven't really. I'm sure there are, and it turned out I was at a medical meeting the first day of it when the study came out, a thoracic surgery meeting, I thought I might get more criticism from those that do a lot of these that really believe strongly in it than I did. And I think part of it is that in the discussion of our paper, we do point out that there may be exceptions to this, like there are to any study. But I would say that for the surgeons that do some of these and try to individualize who they use it in, it may cause them to be a little bit more conservative. And for those that haven't taken it up yet, I suspect it may cause them to, you know, have pause about whether it's something worthwhile to take up. But for those that do a lot, I suspect, and are happy with their results, I suspect they will probably continue to practice pretty much the same.
Well, Dr. Grover, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Well, thank you for your interest. We appreciate it.
I wanted to thank you for your responses to the survey that we recently sent out. We are evaluating those results, and improvements are on the way. You can reach Clinical Conversations at 1-617-440-4374, or you can write to me, JELIA, at jwatch.org. JWATCH.org. Earlier podcasts are all available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where links for all stories can also be found. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time, and thanks for listening.